Welcome to Merrickville.
Thanks for tuning in, Sydney. Lawrence Moody with me this afternoon, and this show is Sydney, 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 packed with Sydney news.
Oh, there's so much going on in Sydney. Police have been going to be armed to the back teeth. We're going to talk about that, Mez. Yep. I'm quite fired up about this, as most people will be, either pro or con.
Mate, I'm not going to lie. Your blood's up since you saw Andrew Bolt punch a couple of lefties and some hoodies on the street of Lygon Street in Melbourne.
I'm so conflicted. I've never wanted to utter the words, "Hey, good on you, Andrew Bolt. I agree with you." I don't want to do that. But Andrew Bolt, as appears in the Daily every day, he was attacked by two extreme left-wingers, and he sorted them out.
Oh, I know.
He punched a man in a hoodie hard in his face.
and
the guy
it.
Deserved it.
Well, in this hour, Loz, we're going to talk about Yahoo Sirius being spotted on the streets of Sydney. Unfortunately, Andrew Bolt punched his face in. And no, he didn't at all.
Fight.
Just kidding. Lots to talk about, Sydney. Looking forward to taking your call shortly. Look, this is a very big, I think, a watershed moment for this city. Sydney, I believe, is going to change in a way that is sad, but probably necessary. And it's quite a serious thing to kick off a show with. Normally we just have a few lols and move on, Loz. But this is a sad indictment of where we are globally. Sydney police are now going to be armed with automatic weapons.
Yeah. And the weird thing about this is that, you know, it's come out of the off the back of the Lint inquiry saying that, you know, police probably should have acted sooner, and also the fact that there's random acts of violence happening worldwide in the name of Islam and terrorist attacks.
Yep.
But for me, there's one sentence there, Mez, and that is police will receive greater powers to fire their weapons. You can put, you know, in terrorist seizures or in riot situations, but basically they're given more power to fire their weapons, and those weapons are going to be automatic weapons.
So the of what's sometimes called ROE, rules of engagement, or, you know, if they've been given clarity on how to use their weapons, we know that they are given greater powers to fire them, but also, too, the type of weaponry that's going to be accessible to our police now. I'm talking about automatic weapons. There's no mucking around now. We become, Sydney, we become one of those cities. One of those cities in the world that already exists, they have for, you know, you might have traveled to one, where you see police with military-grade weapons, and it is a real distinction. You see a different, you feel different when you're there. So now when tourists come to the city, they're going to see our police officers armed with semi-automatic weapons, military-grade A4-style weapons.
Now, it's been the case in London for a long time, and they made a massive leap of faith from bobbies with truncheons, unarmed, to police, you know, carrying military weapons. And so the Metropolitan Police now have standard submachine gun type weapons. The thing is, we've seen attacks on London Bridge, we've seen attacks on outside the Houses of Parliament, plus July 7th, 2005. Those automatic weapons aren't stopping those attacks.
Yeah, well, are they? Well, we do know that on some of the most recent attacks, police who have been armed have been able to repel offenders faster because they've been on the site. But it's the presence and the idea that they are there is meant to be a deterrent, whether or not it is. The fact is, Sydney will change, because once a city becomes armed like that, becomes like a paramilitary, you've got a sense of paramilitary there. That's it.
Does it become?
That's a city now that you never get rid of that.
What's your response to it, though? Yeah, it's never going to be turned back. Do you get a sense of, you know, security when you see a cop with an automatic weapon? You think, great, at least we're safe around them. Or does it change the relaxed vibe, if you will?
Well, that's it. I think you lose an innocence. I think that's what I'm pointing to. I think Sydney's going to lose that innocence. We're a beautiful city. We're a great country, but we're a beautiful looking city and a tourist destination. And I think that we're going to lose our innocence by having these kind of, you know, heavily armed presence around the city as a precaution. But here's the thing. Do I think we need it? Yeah, I do. Sadly, I think we do, because there's too many lunatics who wish to harm innocent civilians. And we've seen how readily they can do it, Loz. All they need is a knife and a bloody...
Or a meat cleaver.
Meat cleaver. And all of a sudden, they're hacking children and women.
Or a hire truck.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, there was a jihadist video went out recently about get a hire truck and drive it into a crowd.
Now,
and so hopefully, you know, if there is automatic weapons and it can stop a truck in its in its tracks, then fine.
Yep.
But now, if it's just, you know, I mean, riot squad cops.
Oh, this is.
I don't know about that.
It's a different type of look. When you go to a country and you see them at the airport and you see them around, you just feel different. Now, I spoke to Neil Fergus, who's the chief executive of Intelligent Risks, a risk management company, a crisis management company, back in March after the attack in London outside the Houses of Parliament in Westminster. And I asked him about the possibility that we may see more police armed like that in Australia. This is what he said in March.
Standard procedures in most state police forces are for our police to be armed, albeit with sidearms. But we have other, of course, tactical resources in all of the state police forces, and those people are weapons trained with long arms and automatic weapons. The issue we're going to have to deal with and have a conversation about going forward is, should some of those specialist resources be deployed routinely into the heart of the major CBD cities? Regrettably, I do think that we need to do it. We don't need to do it in the volumes that you will see in places like Berlin and Paris, where there are literally several hundred tactical forces routinely patrolling. But, you know, it acts as a deterrent. I believe it enhances the confidence of the public about going to these places of mass assembly.
Mm-hmm. Now, we asked that back in March, and it wasn't unanimous, but the general consensus was that people didn't want to see police armed with those. Obviously not all cops. We're not talking about, you know, regular patrol officers. We're talking about specialised and specially trained officers, but a presence there. Now, in March, people were almost unanimously against it. After we've seen several attacks since then in all different parts of the world, including here in Australia, in Melbourne, very recently. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, 13353, have your feelings about automatic weapons changed? Because here's the thing, Loz. Back then I was like, no, we don't need them. We don't want them. I don't want to know about it. Now I'm thinking, you know what? I don't think it's such a bad idea to have people, some specially trained people, with those weapons at the ready on routine patrol. Thoughts?
Well, my thought is this, that if you say yes to automatic weapons, and yes, I do get a sense of security when I've seen cops in London carrying automatic weapons, the price you're going to pay is that someone will be gunned down by mistake eventually. That's just the price you're going to pay. So essentially you're saying, is that the price that we are prepared to pay?
13353, what are your thoughts on this, Sydney? The phones have already lit up even before I called out. I think you guys know where we're heading with this. Have your feelings changed about automatic weapons being in the hands of police officers and having that sense, that presence here in Sydney? Because like I say, once you see those heavily armed police officers in the city, your innocence is lost, it changes, and you never get it back. We're going to see changes to this city that will, I think, change the nature of the city, the nature of the people, the way we feel, and also, too, how we are seen globally. Sydney will see police carrying automatic weapons, and they will have different rules of engagement when it comes to acts like sieges or rogue lone wolf attacks, however it be. Police officers will be given different powers, greater powers to fire their weapons, and we're going to see different legislation, and that will provide us with a sense of security, but at what cost?
Yeah, so if you're in a public place and you're, you know, about to go about and do your worst with a knife or a cleaver, you're done. Is that it?
Well, I think that's the hope. I think the people would like to think that that's how it plays out, but of course, you never know. I mean, how do you second guess terrorism properly? Cameron in Roseville, hello, mate.
G'day, how are you?
Good, mate. What are your thoughts? We're seeing now that these automatic weapons changes have come in. We discussed this back in March. It seems to be the course that the government is taking here. What are your thoughts on that, Cam?
I think it's fantastic. For far too long, the criminals have had the power. Now the police have the power. The police need the power.
Yeah. And so do you agree with a kind of a shoot-to-kill policy?
It's a very grey area, I think.
Well, not with an automatic weapon, it's not. Mm.
But how many times do we see innocent people be shot by a handgun? I mean, it's no different, really.
Yeah, look, my thing is, I think that these guys are very specifically in they're in response to terrorism. I don't think this is, you know, it's a domestic issue as opposed, well, it's a domestic issue, but I don't think it's that kind of domestic based thing. This is all about terrorism and a response to the fear of that. Got Richard in Marrickville. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Merrick. Loz, how are you, boys?
Good, mate. What are your thoughts on this?
Mate, seriously, I don't feel safe. Like you were saying before, Merrick, that our innocence is gone. I don't feel safe at all if I go to the city and that, you know, because who knows if there's someone will accuse you or someone of doing, saying you're a terrorist and there's nothing wrong, and you're doing nothing wrong, and they shoot you.
Mm. Okay, so you feel unsafe having police officers armed and with orders, you know, potentially to shoot to kill?
No, I don't agree with the shoot to kill part, because who knows if the person is mentally ill or not, you know?
Mm. Can I ask also, Richard, you know, in terms of how we profile extremists or terrorists, you know, we're looking for that classic Middle Eastern or African look. What is your ethnicity? What do you look like? Do you get mistaken for that profile?
I do. I am South American. My background's from Peru. And that's the thing. Terrorism doesn't have to be labelled as for the colour you are and everything. It happened all around the world in different countries. Happened in Peru. It wasn't a religious terrorist, what happened there years ago. Mm. It was different kind of reasons and that. Mm. And people should not say, oh, all Muslims are bad or all these people are bad. No. We're all human, mate. Yeah. People can get mixed up and brainwashed into stuff, man, you know? But it's up to the person if they want to push it away and be living as normal, you know?
Yep. Look, I'm with you, Richard. The argument, though, that, you know, people could be a terrorist or they could have mental health issues, I'd argue that if you are a terrorist, you have mental health issues. You are crazy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that all crazy people or all mental people with mental health issues are terrorists. Of course not. But what I'm saying is that if you're a terrorist, you are unstable. And we saw that guy in Melbourne who had been reported. He'd been on parole. He was known to police. He'd incited violence before. He was a bad character. They shot him dead. And that's the way it worked. But not before he'd taken another human life.
So, and injured three cops.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, whether or not he's a terrorist in the sense that he was employed by ISIS or Al-Qaeda or whoever else, it doesn't matter. He sparked terror. He's a terrorist. Steve in Carlton.
G'day, Merrick. Boys, how you going?
Very good, mate. Good. You're an ex-cop.
Yes, I am. A long time ago, but yes, I was a copper back in the 90s.
Very interested to hear your thoughts on this then.
Well, so back then, we were kind of trained. It was like a shoot-to-kill cop thing anyway. And what they were trying to say to us was, if it's serious enough for you to get your gun out of its holster and point it at someone and pull the trigger, it's got to be your life's in danger or a member of the public who is, you know, an innocent bystander, their life's in danger. So it's got to be one of the two, one or the other, right? So because you can imagine the situation if they said to us, you know, if you're in a bit of a dangerous situation, just try and wing the bloke, get him in the leg or get him in the shoulder. And you'd have blokes who are not that great a shot, you know, in court saying, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I tried to get him in the leg, but I got him in the temple. Mm. A bit of a shame. Like, that's not going to work, right? So it was always, if it's that serious, it's got to be your life or theirs kind of thing.
Yep, absolutely.
I think, you know, fast forward now 20 years down the track and we've got blokes who are terrorists or linked with terror kind of groups or that sort of thing. Mate, of course it's not ideal that the cops are going to carry automatic weapons, and I can guarantee you most of the blokes are probably sitting there thinking this is a huge responsibility to carry an AR-15 or whatever it is, M4s or whatever they're using. Yep. Like, that's a big deal. But if you've got dudes with automatic firearms and the cops have got a Glock, man, you can't. That's not a fair fight.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can't expect the police to take a knife to a gunfight.
But also, I think the equation.
If the baddies have got some pretty serious kind of weapons, you got to allow the cops to have the same sort of thing. Otherwise, we're going to be burying cops, and that's no good.
100%.
But also, I just think of that truck in Nice, a massive truck. You need a lot of bullets to stop that thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's certainly one thing is for certain: a handgun is not going to have any chance at all. Thank you all for your calls. So many people ringing through. It's a bit of a heavy start. We're going to lighten it up in a minute. Joined by Lawrence Mooney this afternoon. Great to have you
here. So far this hour, we have spoken about Andrew Bolt fighting in the street. We've spoken about guns and police being sanctioned to carry automatic weapons in Sydney. And also, just to finish off the conflict, because of what's been happening in the world, a lot of us blokes particularly, and women as well, have been preparing themselves mentally for an attack, okay? Now, Mez, we were talking off air. You said that you were preparing yourself in the post office recently. You saw a man come in, had his hands in his jacket.
Yep.
You were ready to knock him out with the bottle of wine you were carrying.
That's right, because I often drink at the post office.
We all do.
I can't possibly get bubble wrap unless I'm half cut. Yep.
So. I'm only ever in there to get a picnic set to go with my bottle of wine. or antique ice cream trucks in club colours. But what happened to the post office? That's another conversation altogether. Anyway, it turns out the guy needed a new SIM for his phone.
Wanted his phone recharged. Yeah, I went in there and there was a guy who was demanding to see the manager and he was aggressive and he had his hands in his jacket pockets and he looked dicey. He did. He looked agitated.
And you thought it's on.
And I thought, hang on a second, is this going to be that moment where... Because I've been trained recently to think and to be more alert. Like, I am on guard and I am worried and I am kind of slightly aware of my environment now in a sense of danger. And I just thought, and lucky I didn't knock the bloke out because he just wanted a new SIM card for his phone and I nearly killed him. So
I was doing that too. I was preparing mentally for a terrorist attack in my Pilates class because I'm the only guy in there and I'm the youngest by about 10 years. So... I have to step up. But then I looked around and I thought, I reckon Gladys has got this. Even though she's got a dodgy knee, I think she's good to go.
Oh, jeez.
Because I'll be under the reformer bed screaming for mercy. Please, not me.
You're like a male Anne Frank. You're Frank Anne.
Without painting too ugly a picture here, Mez, I have spent a lot of time at home, a little bit drunk in front of the computer. Sometimes I've fallen asleep in front of the computer.
Oh, that's embarrassing. If somebody comes home and they catch you like that because you've got...
Because you haven't got your pants on.
Why is there a bottle of Crisco?
That kind of falling asleep,
Oh,
no.
Sorry. Okay.
So no... Sometimes, you know, you're just surfing the net and you've had a couple of wines and you think, oh, I'll reward myself. I've got more books at home than I could ever read. I'm a serial book and DVD buyer online.
Yep.
And most of it's under the auspices of our good friend alcohol. Now, you know, drink wisely. And if you're at home, that doesn't really apply, does it? So
I think the line is drink responsibly.
Unless you're at home and you're close to your bed and the kids are asleep.
Drink wisely. What is it? What should you do wisely? Yeah. Anyway, drink responsibly.
No, I think it is wisely on the back of it.
Shut up. I've had half a bottle of bourbon. Anyway.
I'm not pregnant.
There's a great new app come out of the UK, and it's called DrinkPay. DrinkPay was developed in the UK after research found that half of the drinkers in the UK admitted they regretted a purchase they made when drunk.
Oh.
I know you've done that, haven't you?
Oh.
Is that motorbike finished yet?
12 months ago. You might have heard about this if you haven't.
I had never heard you stutter so much as you just did then.
You know what? I was on Gumtree. I was McHammed. I was at home. The wife had abandoned me to the computer, and before I knew it, I'd bought a 1981 Honda from South Australia. Go, Mez, you winner. Oh, I'll do this. I can do so much to this bike. A year later, where is it, Mez? Still not riding it.
Never mind, because some of the examples of drunk purchases include flying lessons, a rowing club lifetime membership. Who joins a rowing club?
I'll tell you, there's a guy who's just gone from an ass paddling site to that and just gone, subscribe to that ass paddling site. No, it's not ass paddling, mate. It's rowing.
Well, our Prime Minister loves to row, so it might have been him. 30 pairs of thongs, and this is the winner, buying a live chicken online.
I hope that was all the same person.
I think they've gone to Google something else. And all of a sudden, they found themselves with a male rooster, but that's not actually what they wanted when they were going for a purchase. Right. They were trying to, I think it was a chicken, potentially.
They were Googling cock, are you saying? And they got a rooster. Yeah, well, that's another word for a rooster. So you're wrong, Mez. Anyway, the user has to link their credit card to the app and can set blocks for certain things. Now, we were discussing this off air, Liam. Is there a breathalyzer involved? Because
The way it works is obviously the phone can't tell whether you're drunk or not. When you buy the app, it comes with a companion breathalyzer that you have to connect to the phone.
Oh, is that how it works? Yeah. You get a little breatho. That'd be handy to have, you know, if you've had a couple of drinks.
Lawrence doesn't think so.
There is the problem with the app, okay? It's meant to stop you doing silly things as a drunk. How many times have you been drunk and convinced yourself and others that you're fine?
Oh.
You know, back in the bad old days of
mate, I call that
drink
Saturdays.
Driving, just like I'm fine.
I know, I never drink drive, but there's so many times when I say to myself, "Nah, you'd be all right.
You're right.
You should definitely get on the roof. Yeah. Why don't you do the gutters now, mate?
Yeah,
you'd be all right." And George will just go, "Where are you going with that ladder? It's going to get on the roof." She goes, "You've been drinking." Yeah, but I've only had a few.
Hey, you boys, give me a go of your skateboard. I'll show you how to do a couple of tic-tacs.
Gary, I've only had a couple. I reckon we should go and just say hello to Andrew Bolt. And just say hello to him. And just chuck
put some glitter on his face. Yeah, you'll love it. Yeah,
mate, it's funny. He's going to love it. He's going to love it.
But in the words of Lawrence Mooney, drink wisely.
Drink wisely. I like drinking wisely. Sometimes I love heaps of wisdom. A massive, massive Sydney story. And, you know, we've talked about the fact Absolutely. That the police are going to be armed with automatic weapons, that they're going to shoot to kill orders now. But the story that everyone in Sydney is talking about is that Yahoo Sirius has been spotted for the first time in 10 years.
And, of course, Yahoo Sirius made the name Yahoo actually popular before the website Yahoo, and so they have both faded into obscurity together.
Yeah. Who was the least successful, Yahoo or Yahoo Sirius?
I think they tried to take him to court, didn't they?
I think he tried to take them.
Yeah, right.
Yahoo, or Ask Jeeves?
Ask Jeeves. I remember.
Ask Jeeves
Kids
was a search engine.
I have not heard that spoken by a human in so long, I'd forgotten it.
I went on a Yahoo Sirius deep dive after I saw this story this morning. Do you guys know what his real name was?
No.
Winning McWinner?
Greg.
Oh, of course it was Greg.
Greg, middle name Gomez, surname Pede.
Oh, yeah. Pede. The yeah. Pedo.
He's currently 63 years old.
That would have been his nickname for sure.
Would have been for sure. You know no wonder he changed it to Reckless Kelly, because nobody wants to be called Pedo.
The Pedo.
Hey, Pedo, we're going for some beers. You should come with us. Where are you going to have beers? I don't know. We're just going to walk past this playground first. You want to come, Pedo? Past
hey,
the playground?
Pedo,
we're just going to go down.
No
to the,
wonder.
We're just going to go down to this sporting ground and throw the footy around. Do you want to come? There's a whole lot of children's playground equipment.
Do you know what his net worth is? What do you reckon his net worth is?
Millions.
Well, $13 million was the gross of young Einstein, both here and overseas. So I'd say that he might be worth $20
million. Mez, your guess?
I don't reckon he's doing that good. I reckon he's down to about, I reckon his total worth now is about $4 million, $5
million. $500,000 bucks.
He's blown the lot.
He has made some poor life decisions. Oh. No wonder they call him Reckless Kelly. They certainly didn't call him Frugal Kelly, did they?
Because we'll put the pictures up on our Instagram page. The pictures show him getting out of a BMW that's got roof racks on it.
He's wearing
like
gumboots.
An older style BMW. With gumboots.
That BMW.
It's about 2002, I reckon.
Yeah, it is. Spot on, Lots. Mm. I can tell by the rims, yep.
Yeah.
All right, so he's worth about half a... He's
you just can't say I can tell by the rims and not have me giggle at that. But anyway,
nah.
He's let the crazy hair go, so he's sporting a more middle-aged kind of grey mop. Mm. And what do we know about him apart from the fact that he's wearing gumboots down the shops here?
He's living in the northern beaches, clearly living the dream on the peninsula there. He's 63 years of age now.
He's looking okay. He's in pretty good nick.
He's probably he'd be up for his retirement package now.
Now, for some of the youth out there that are thinking, who is Yahoo Sirius and what is Reckless Kelly or Young Einstein? Which is the movie that you'd recommend to watch?
How do you?
It's a tough decision.
The Castle.
I think Young Einstein. Mm. It's about a young guy called Einstein. He's a scientist. He's a genius, and he grew up in Tassie, and he takes his theories to the world.
It's kind of a
wacky Crocodile Dundee, if you will.
But asking to choose which film you have to watch, it's a little bit like you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, "Look, I've got
your left leg or your right leg."
No, I was going to say nut, because I could always get a prosthetic leg and it will still work.
Yeah.
And he says, which one would you have, left or right? It's a little bit like that. He also made a third film called Mr. Accident. He played the part of Roger Crumpkin in Mr. Accident.
Yeah, they're great films.
They're all classic.
They're up there. And in the pantheon of stars that you can spot on the streets of Sydney, there he is, Yahoo Sirius, also known as Greg.
No.
The Pete. No,
Greg Pete.
G'day, Greggy.
Greggy Pete. But they would have called him Pete-O.
Yeah.
Legend, how are you?
Pete-O, you coming for a drink?
Whereabouts? Whereabouts are you going for a drink?
We're just going to go on to the bubblers in that school group.
Good luck with your school gig tonight, Lawrence.
Thanks very much.
I read an interesting thing on the weekend, I think it was on news.com.au, about St Paul's College here in Sydney, which is part of Sydney Uni, where some former students had talked about the process of hazing at school, which is an initiation. It's supposed to be like a rite of passage for some university students, but about how far it had got out of hand. Now, St Paul's College is very, very well known for being a school of, I suppose, a place where some of Sydney's elite would find their education. We're talking about very, very wealthy families sending their children to this school to seek out an education. That's a boys' school. And they have a hazing ritual there, or alleged to have several hazing rituals for new students, including some of them, dropping them off in random locations and forcing them to find their way home with no money or shoes, which, I, you know, is an initiation. I've got to be honest, I don't straight away bristle at that. But then I found out one student had been dropped off 40 kilometres north of Canberra. That's too close to Canberra. That's not funny. Of course, it's just a joke. Trying to find some light in there, Liam. But some of the other rituals, some of the other hazing efforts included smacking other students with thongs whilst on all fours. So queer. So weird. You don't smack blokes on all fours with thongs. What is this? I know private schools get up to some weird gear sometimes, but fair dinkum. Like, whoever says, yeah, just smack me with a thong. What? Are you in a German nightclub? Get out of it. No way would I cop that. Anyway, and one student, and this was really quite sad, another student spoke out about how he'd gone back to his room, the room was trashed, and it had been peed on. Some of the other students had weed on. Now, he was systematically bullied by other students at the school. He had to leave, and then he took some time out. He had mental health issues. He eventually returned, after years, to his studies and went on and got his degree. But his point was, by that stage, the effect of being bullied, the effect of the hazing at school, the fact that he had been singled out by other students and had been the subject of ridicule and harassment had affected him long term. Even though he went back and completed his degree, he'd lost so many years as a result of that. But it's just, I find that whole hazing thing, and I know that hazing exists at schools, also exists in parts of the military. It was the Navy years ago rubbed it right out because they had the whole crossing the equator thing where they put sump oil in your crack and it was a bit weird. Again, weird stuff.
And it's such an American, it's one of those classic things of it's American culture from their colleges and their universities over there that we feel the need to appropriate here within our systems. But, I mean,
some of them are just odd. Like, some, don't you reckon that some of them just look a little bit like repressed homosexual activity?
Oh, well.
I mean, seriously, what bloke says, I want to spank you with a thong, and another bloke goes, yeah, all right, this is something we should all do. Let's pour some oil in your crack. What are you doing? What's that?
I think the severity of it is indicated by the fact that the bloke in charge of that at the college, Warden Reverend Canon Dr. Ivan Head,
That's a big name.
Is standing down.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? If this was not a serious issue, if this was something that, you know, he could work through, people in charge could work through.
This is not an isolated case, not at this school, but also to, you know, just generally. And as I said, I'm not going to mince my words with it. It is a very private school and a very private school proclivity that you see these initiation rites. They're always a bit weird, spanking, paddling, all that sort of caper, or just inherent cruelty towards other people. But I want to know, I want to open up the phones, 133353, have you experienced hazing? I never have. I've never seen it. Like, I've seen initiation into groups and stuff like that. You know, sometimes in footy clubs, you know, you go and play footy in your footy club.
You get presented a jumper in the circle.
Yeah, and then everybody throws beer in your face and you're out. It's like, hey, I'm going in beer. How good's this? That's okay. That's not weird. That's fun, right? That's an initiation. You go and play for a new footy club, somebody's going to pour beer on your head. Done, right? But when you go to a college or an institution, whether it be military or public, it's or private, and people start doing weird stuff like that, I just don't get it. I want to know about, we've got some calls coming through now. Have you experienced hazing? Do you either firsthand or you've witnessed it? Or some of these weird initiations? I'm not necessarily talking about brutality.
You can remain anonymous if you'd like.
100%. I'm just interested to hear how it kicks off. Because for mine, if a bunch of my mates said, let's all get a thong and spank Gary when he's on all fours, I'd say, you know what? Why don't we not do that? Why don't we just have a beer and pour it on our heads? Why are we hitting a guy with a thong? But the problem is that sometimes these things have long-term detrimental effects. We've seen in the military, it has come out that people who have been hazed have had long-term problems with that. And also, too, in the education system as well. But 133353, what are your experiences with hazing? Give us a call. We're talking about hazing. There was a story online on the weekend about St Paul's College here in Sydney, which is a very, very elite, very expensive university linked to Sydney Uni, and it's a college. And one of the rituals that they have is hazing, where, you know, by one measure or another, people are initiated or they're ostracized, depending on how well they take to it. But some kids have, you know, had their rooms thrashed and been urinated on. Kids have been so scared of their fellow students that they've had to hide sharp metal objects underneath their pillows.
And this
in
is
defense.
This isn't a college endorsed thing. It's just something that
has
it has emerged that you know,
but it's not isolated.
Students at the college have been participating in and coordinating.
It's not isolated to this institution or to the education institution or to the military even. So, taking your calls and what are your experiences with hazing? Got Matt in Neutral Bay. Hello, mate.
How you going, Mizza?
Very good, mate. You've had an experience with hazing?
Oh, not personally, mate, but I've seen it happen. I went to an exclusive boys' school in Sydney in Stanmore, and, yeah, mate, the initiation into the boarding house used to be a thing called Honey Bum. That's where you used to pin down the student and get a squeezable tube of honey and put it up where the sun don't shine and give it a squeeze, mate.
Mate, why do blokes do this, Matt? Like, don't,
oh,
do you know what I mean?
I don't know, man. There's some twisted souls out there. I mean, we're talking the late 90s there, so things, you know, were a bit different back then to now. But, I mean, I don't condone it at all. I mean, I saw it and I said my bit and walked away, mate. But that was the ritual and, you know, they tried to do it on me, but I put a few knuckles on a few chins to get away from them. But,
I don't blame you,
mate. Yeah, mate, there's some buckled souls out there, isn't there, mate?
Yeah, that's a really unusual thing because, quite frankly, it's much better on toast than in your ass. I'm just going to I'm putting it out there. I've had honey on toast. It's great.
The only thing's peanut butter, mate, not nuts, mate.
Yeah, no, exactly. Honey's much better eaten as opposed to an enema. Thanks, Matt. Let's get from one Matt to another Matt. We've got Desai, is it?
Yep, that's me, mate.
How are you, Desai?
Not too bad, buddy.
What are your experiences with hazing?
I've got a couple here. So, originally from New Zealand, living in Parramatta now, but at the hostel, they used to make you run a gauntlet, so you'd have the youngest guys out of the whole years right up to your older blokes, and they'll fill the pillowcases and sleeping bags and mattresses up with rugby boots and rocks, and pretty much you have to wake it from one end of the room to the other, and if you didn't make it, you had to go again.
Oh, so, and they'd beat you. That's an old school.
Beat the crap out of you. So you start with the younger guys at the beginning of the hall, and then you work your way down to the first 15 rugby boys that hammer the crap out of you.
So, you know, it's in the army, sometimes they used to put blocks of soap or something like that into a sock, and they'd beat you as you ran through. That's, you know, like you're running through a wall of people whacking it. But this, I want to know, whereabouts did this happen specifically? Did you say in a hostel?
Gisborne, New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, and the same at the same time. So the first 15 rugby team used to have another ritual. So if you had a new guy jump onto the first 15, if it was his first away trip, they used to chant, chuck the whole four pack down the back of the bus. You have to walk your way down and they'd chant the song out. And as soon as the song's finished, the whole goal was to rip your undies. So the whole four pack jump in, lift you up and rip, keep on going until your undies rip. And it got to the point where one guy was wearing boxers and no undies one year, and it cut through his arm and up the side of his legs. And that's what made it stop. And same with the gauntlet. Someone got their nose broken and fractures in the arm, so they pretty much had to cut that out too.
You know what? I hate to say this, Desai, but the whole honey bum thing is starting to sound a lot more attractive than it did a few minutes ago. I think I'd be hard to choose which one out of those two. Simon on the Central Coast. Hello, mate.
How are you, Merrick?
Okay, good. You've heard of a hazing ritual, something that's happened at school. What was it?
No, mate. This is when I was an apprentice in printing.
Okay.
They used to do what they called blue balls, where they'd get the ink from the machine, which was magenta, which was cyan, which was a blue ink.
Yep.
And rub it all over your
pants down,
hanging up. Yep. And mate, to get that off, you needed solvent, which burned like anything. And mate, it was not a pleasant experience.
So you did this in the printing industry. Like, you'd reckon that once you get into a professional occupation, that kind of bullying and that kind of more playground mentality would have gone by then.
No, mate, I didn't do it. I actually got out of it getting it done to me, and I was probably one of the reasons why it didn't go on any further, because I managed to get hold of the guy and give him a what for. So.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. And I think it's absolutely disgraceful. There's absolutely no place for putting ink on your balls. We all know that that's where Denko rub goes.
This is your station of origin.
State of origin.
Nothing hits you like Holden State of Origin. Feel it. Be there. Get your tickets to the only Origin game in Sydney. Go to nrl.com/tickets. Proudly, Sydney's Triple M.
21st of June, it kicks off on a Wednesday night. Holden State of Origin game 2. Everybody wants to be there because it's going to be an old school ass kicking for Queensland. Let's not lie. Today's category for Origin, for your suburb, is there a lawn bowls club in your suburb? Do you live in a suburb with a lawn bowls club?
So if you live in a suburb with a lawn bowls club, call us now, 123-53, and you can win 2 tickets to State of Origin.
Love a lawn bowls club. I rolled a few over in Newcastle recently.
Do you know my brother quit football, like quit playing amateur footy, to play lawn bowls on Sundays?
Really?
Yeah.
Why would he do that?
He's just old before his time.
He
plays down for the Rose Bay Bowls Club. Double Bay Bowls Club, beg your pardon.
Oh, sorry. Down at Double Bay Bowls Club. So what, the other guy's just rolling around their prostates, are they?
Mate, I've got a theory that he's done it so that he can get in the wheels of all the old blokes as they fall off the perch.
What's he doing for them?
Oh, no. just a friendly ear to chat to.
Just let me put your balls in the bag there. I'll help you, Graham. Speaking of Graham.
This is amazing.
How's that? We've got Graham in South Penrith.
Now, Mez, before we speak to Graham, if you remember, Graham has been trying to win these tickets. Graham was calling up when we said, does the M2 go?
Yes, we remember you, Graham. Welcome to the show, Gragra.
G'day, fellas. How are you?
Very good indeed, mate. You did. You called up, and I was giving you a bit of jip on the air. I was being a little...
You were, mate. You were.
I'm sorry about that, but you were trying to claim that the M2 ran through your suburb, and that is not true.
No, I pretty much hung up after you gave the clue.
Yeah, but then you rung back. So, Graham, you live in South Penrith, so it'd be the Penrith Bowling and Rec Club, yeah?
That's it.
So, well, that's legitimate, mate. Guess what?
What's that, mate?
Chase the ball long enough, bound to get a kick. You have got yourself a ticket for you and a mate to go to Origin 2.
Awesome. Thanks very much,
Well
man.
Done, mate.
Awesome.
Persistence pays off. Well done, Graham, and thanks for being called Graham. It's always good to have a Graham on air. A story, a plot line, a development in Home and Away sees ice addiction hit the shores of Summer Bay. Now, you can only imagine, I understand, of course, that, you know, ice is a problem and we're all very aware of it. But once it starts getting written into the plot lines of Home and Away, has it jumped the shark? How do you integrate ice addiction into Home and Away? I'm just going to go to this boat shed and say hello to me old mate, Alfie Bloomin' Dingo Stewart. Hey, Alfie, got any cash on ya?
You old reprobate. Irene told me to keep an eye out for you.
How come you got spiders coming out of your head, Alf? You on the gear, Alfie?
Be looking for a job.
Oh, might be. What sort of job? Berg? Carjack? Robbery? I'm up for any job with you, Alf. Except for a hand job. Might be on ice, but I'm not that desperate.
Well, there you go. Key to the boat shops, eh? Open her up first thing in the morning.
Sweet. I'll open the bait shop, but not before I get Irene pregnant. Is Irene a character? Sounds like a character name. Anyway, I'm going to get Irene so pregnant, and then I'm going to get her on the gear, and then we're going to claim welfare and move to Minnow. How the f*** you like them apples, Alf?
Why don't you just turn around and walk back out that door?
Because I'm an ice head, Alf. I just came through the window, you idiot.
Think you might have concussion.
Concussion? I just told you.
I'm on the ice, mate. Been on the glass barbie all day, and now I want to root Irene. Besides, this character here, he's already done it.
Yeah, they all know. I've got nothing to hide.
This is still my place. Now get out of here before I call the cops.
Hang on a second. Were you on Dancing with the Stars? Where the f*** do I know you from? You Anthony Collier? No, that's not it.
If it's a fight you want, pal, you just got yourself one. I'm going to kill you!
Gee, settle down, Alf. You're about to blow your prostate. I don't want to fight. Look, just have a little take on this, Alfie. Yeah, see? That's better. Stop going off your head and just get out of your head. Yeah, that's it. Shh, Alfie. Now, which way to the caravan park? Is there still a caravan park? Is that a thing still? I don't know. No idea.
Well, we spoke to Russell Crowe about a week or so ago, and his new film, The Mummy, is in cinemas today. Get along and see it. I tell you, it is definitely worth the ticket price, even though I went and saw it for free because it's part of my job.
First time he ever worked with Tom Cruise in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a good film, and we spoke to Russell about it recently. You have a fight scene. Who's coming off in the real world? Who's coming off well in that one? Because you both are pretty physically capable blokes.
He's really strong for his size. He's a little fella.
What, like Liam? Liam or above Leprechaun?
About the same.
Mm. Okay, so yeah. Just a little person.
I'll say that.
But he's very strong. He's extremely aerobically fit, you know, so he can do that stuff all day long.
Yeah.
The great thing about it is, though, he came and saw me about it at the beginning. He goes, are we doing this, you know, or are we going to give this over to the stunt guys? And I'm like, we should be doing this, man. It's you and me. It's our first time working together. He goes, great, that's exactly what I want. So he actually gave the choreography of the fight over to me. I worked on it with the stunt coordinator, trying to take advantage of a series of skills, boxing stuff, martial arts stuff, a little bit of gymnastics stuff with jumps and stuff. And they had the big ideas like the wire work and all that, you know. And then we just plugged Tom into it, you know. He came into the rehearsals and we said, we're thinking about this, this, and this. And he was like, cool, let's do it, you know.
Because it looks super genuine. You know what I mean?
What we tried to do is have elements of it where it's, you know, that close infighting and it's just about hand speed.
Yep.
And you got to be there. If you're not there, you're going to get smack in the head.
Did you get a bit twitchy, Russ? Do you get like a little bit of like footy players get like a white line fever? When you're in that moment, you know, it's hard to pull punches. It's harder to pull them than it is to throw them, I reckon.
See, I come out of musical theatre. You know, so
dance tough guy arena.
Well, dance routines are the basis of why I can achieve the stuff I can achieve in fight sequences, because it's all about choreography and remembering it and actually being able to commit fully to something without it actually, you know, hurting anybody. Now, every now and then, you're gonna get whacked. You know, I was doing a fight sequence with Keith David in The Nice Guys, and I've got a bump on my nose here. My nose is a bit flat there. But it used to be, before I did Nice Guys, it was flat there and the bump was on the other side. Keith David elbowed me in the noggin.
Ooh.
Just like at full speed.
He moved a bump.
Yeah,
relocated your nose.
The crack was so loud that everybody around the monitors went whoosh, and took their headphones off and went, oh, what was that?
Oh.
You know? Every now and then, you might have a little bit of an accident. You know, some things are so close. There's a really cool moment in the fight six with me and Tom where he kicks me in the head. You know, and it's so absolutely brutal, you know.
Yeah.
Just the foot speed, the head turn, you know, the blood against the window and all that sort of stuff. So, he's really good at it. So it's fun.
Yeah. You know, he can trust
like,
him, obviously.
It's like dancing at that sort of level or whatever. It's just, it's fun and you get into the groove of it, you know. But there was one moment where he gave me a little glint in the eye and I was like, right, here he comes. Here comes Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Thank you for visiting Merrickville. If you missed anything during your stay, subscribe to the Merrickville podcast on iTunes or with your favourite Android app. 104.9 Triple M.